We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard. Today's topic, vulnerability. What are we talking about? Do you want to talk about how you feel about vulnerability? Are you vulnerable? Because you asked me a question the other day, which was, do I feel that I'm vulnerable on the podcast? And do I feel like I'm as vulnerable on the podcast as I am with my children and vice versa? And we both had totally different answers, right? So do you want to?
Yeah, I was thinking, I don't even know how it came up, but I was pondering, like, what impression you get from listening to people. And, like, I can tell when I'm listening to a podcast when a person is, like, delving into things that they've worked through or that have been challenging for them or like that they feel uncomfortable with still. And I love that. I love it when they like do like a roar about stuff, you know? Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't think I've really been like that. Mm-hmm. Like, but nothing has come up that we've spoken about yet that kind of has maybe like triggered that.
Hit the vulnerability button for you.
Yeah, or maybe specific. I don't know if it's like knowing that people are listening as well, of like how much to talk about to a certain point about your life. Because what some of the stories I have to tell are not just my stories. There's other people who I live with and people that I've lived with who I care like very deeply about. And there's certain things that are between those people and me that I don't know if it's like appropriate to share, you know? And then I was thinking like, does that mean I'm not vulnerable though? Like as a person, does that mean that I'm very cold or like when am I vulnerable? Because if I'm not openly vulnerable on here, like where am I showing vulnerability? And I said to you, like probably with my kids is the place when I do that the most. I've done a lot of practice of that. Because it did not come naturally to me to be openly vulnerable with children.
So what does that look like for you? What does it look like for you to be vulnerable with your children?
So being wrong and openly being wrong about something, like apologizing, taking responsibility for actions that are still uncomfortable to take responsibility for, shouting, being shamed, like shaming them or guilting them, openly expressing emotions like sadness. I dropped my sister off at the train station last week. What day is it? Oh, it's Monday. Last week. And just had like an open sob in the car. And Ivy was like, "You're making me cry." She's in her. I was like, I know, it's sad. But I think in the past, I would have just choked it down and just like not shown that I was sad. You know, like that kind of open, like when I watch things on the TV, I just openly cry about them, whatever. I think it's the most easy to be vulnerable in my family of six out of all the people in my life. So I think that's it, showing like emotions openly, discussing them, not being ashamed of any of them. And if I am ashamed of them, trying to work out why I'm ashamed of them. But then I do struggle with that in like a wider group or even just like sometimes with friends. I think it's maybe the role I play in a lot of relationships is that I'm the one that is quite strong. And I don't mean strong as in like, I don't necessarily think that's a good thing. I don't mean like that means the other person is weak. What I mean is, like, I often hold the space rather than allow myself to be held.
Yeah, the question that is coming up for me is about that. Is vulnerability the opposite of being strong? And is being, and when we say, like, it's that kind of stiff upper lip, right? That kind of very, we don't show emotions kind of thing. Is that right or wrong? I guess is my question, because it almost sounds like vulnerability is a goal, and I'm not sure that I'm subscribed to that goal yet. I'm not convinced by, I guess, so here, well, to give context to the reason why I'm saying that is because when you text me that, my answer was I'm much more vulnerable on the podcast and in my writing on social media and stuff for my business than I am with my children. And I think I'm quite guarded with my emotions around my children. And it's probably quite intentional that I'm guarded with my emotions around my children, and also quite intentional that I'm vulnerable on the podcast.
I mean, listen to last week's episode if you haven't. That was fairly vulnerable, and quite intentional with my writing, because it feels not appropriate, but it feels like there's a greater purpose for me in terms of there's a space for me to be vulnerable here, which actually turns my feelings into purpose that will help other adults. And yeah, and so that's why I choose to be vulnerable on the podcast. But then I was thinking, does that then mean that not being openly vulnerable or having lots of feelings around my children is a flaw in parenting? I don't know. Yeah, I'm curious as to where that balance lies. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to ask? I'm not sure I do.
Yeah. So the purpose of vulnerability for me is to grow in my communication with the people I love the most, right? So, like, the purpose of me being vulnerable with my children is so that we can communicate to each other about how we feel and create an environment where there isn't a right or wrong experience, but we know how each other feels in that moment, so that we don't then project or blame or try and second guess each other. Because I think I have had the experience of always having to try and second guess emotions through a lot of my relationships I've had. So I'm like trying to work out how people feel rather than having the words myself to ask or tell, and them not having the skills either to say or identify even how they're feeling. So in a way, it's like that role model, I guess, of having the emotion, like naming it or the experience, whatever. And then therefore it demystifies the whole thing.
And is there a limit to where you wouldn't show or name the feelings?
I guess, and the reason why I'm asking this is fairly selfish, and some of the feelings that I have,
I don't think my kids should be party to, because they're so deep or raw that it would be, I don't think it would be okay for me to share that with my kids. And so I choose not to. Does that make sense? Like, so is there, yeah, where's the limit with vulnerability? Guess, you have one, yeah.
Yeah, I guess my limit is more about age appropriateness. So say I'm feeling something that has come up about a childhood wound, I won't say to them, like, mummy feels like that because her parenting was this, and they will instantly associate my parents with the reason why mummy's feeling that way. I'll just put it in more of a terms of like, there's this, I'm feeling this deep inside because of something that's happened to me in the past, and it's got nothing to do with you. This isn't about anything you've done. It's about experiences I've had. I won't say like necessarily what the experiences are that led to the feeling, because unless they ask me, that's not really what they're after anyway. They just want to know that how I'm feeling is not about them. That's what kids need, isn't it? Like that reassurance that they have not caused the feeling. That's how I see it anyway, like in parenting. So by being vulnerable about the feeling rather than the experience conversations are more for friends for me. Mm-hmm. Because that's with a person who is removed from the situation. But also it's sometimes about talking to the person it actually happened with as well, for me, because I talk to my family. So I'll often, if something comes up, I can speak to a couple of members of my family about it, and we have some very vulnerable conversations. But with some members I don't, because it's not, there's no responsibility on their side for that experience, so therefore it wouldn't be beneficial to me or them to share. So I think it's about appropriateness and me reading that in the moment of like, yeah, how to explain to the other person involved in my experience. So say we're in a room and I'm crying, and the kid's like, why are you sad? Oh, I'm just remembering something that happened to me, making me sad. It's got nothing to do with you. You haven't made me sad. There's nothing happened today that's made me sad. This came up and it's, you know, we've had.
I love that. I love the difference between the experience and the feelings. And I think I'll definitely identify with the fact that I don't think I'm very good at that at the moment. I don't think that I think the impact of trauma is one that when you're triggered, so when I'm feeling any feelings for me, that's like a trigger, and I'm instantly transported to a place of, I'm just in that moment again. And so I find it really difficult to differentiate between an experience and the feeling that I'm currently having. That's really different. That's a really different way of approaching vulnerability.
Yeah, and like what you just said, there's that, the level at which you felt that first experience is going to be different for every person in every situation. So like, yeah, if you're experiencing something brutal from childhood that's taking you back to a moment where you were like physically, emotionally, all the unsafeness in one like foul swoop, is going to create like a much bigger release than something that's come up that was relatively minor in comparison. I think we've spoken about before that I feel like from childhood, yes, I have experiences that haven't been all great. I'm not protesting to like the most glorious of childhoods with like two emotionally available, switched on and like conscious parents. That isn't the experience I had. That's pretty much the experience most people have not had. But you can have like, and this is the difference between the work you do around trauma and the work we do on woundings. And I think my personal thoughts are they're two different. And trauma comes in levels. I cannot subscribe to the fact that you're either traumatized or not, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, yeah.
There's varying levels.
Yeah. And trauma is about, not really about whatever's happened. It's about how your body's coped with it,
yes,
or not coped with it, and how your body's released or not released the impact.
And I think trauma, that woundings can be, I think woundings can, and I think to some extent, all levels of trauma stay in your body, right? So because when I'm triggered or whatever you want to call it, activated, dysregulated, all the things, and I'm experiencing a moment in childhood where I didn't know how to, you know, soothe myself, then my body's responding like a child would, shouting, screaming, tantruming, you know, the exact response that your body wants to give it as a child. And I know when it's happening, and I know my body's doing that because it wasn't soothed at that age in the way that I needed. And I can identify why. I can be compassionate to my parents as to why they didn't know what to do, because, you know, for lots of reasons. And I feel like more recently I've been able to catch myself in the experience. And it's like a very quick, like, oh, you're behaving like a toddler. Why are you behaving like a toddler? Like, because you really, this experience is making you a toddler, because when you were a toddler or whatever, you know, that wasn't cool.
I think, I'm just thinking back to like one particular memory I have of when I was little and remembering seeing my mum lying on the floor, depressed, like listening. I think I said it before on the podcast, but just that having quite a big impact on me, seeing her. I guess that's quite a vulnerable state for her to be fully in that feeling. And I think the key piece that you're saying that feels like a really positive way of being vulnerable is that you have the emotional language to say, this is how I'm feeling, and to be able to communicate with your family, it's not about you, it's about me. And I think otherwise, like you said, it very easily becomes, especially for young children who don't have the emotional regulation, or they're in their kind of young child, like narcissistic, everything's about me kind of thing, like all children are, then they internalize it, right? So I'm looking at my mum lying on the floor going, what's happened? Why are you so sad? What have I done wrong? Have I done something wrong? You're not talking to me. What's going on? My mum's sad. And actually then navigating that, if she maybe had, I don't remember her saying this to me. If she did, sorry, if she didn't, I don't think she did, but you know, if she had the emotional language to say, it's because of, and it's got nothing to do with you, that would be really powerful. That would be a really powerful thing for children to experience, I think, that then doesn't involve the child going, oh shit, what have I done wrong? And or what can I do to bring my mummy back? I need to be a people pleaser, or I need to be a entertainer or whatever. Like, that feels really powerful. But that's,
I think too, like for me, the fun, you cannot be vulnerable without the language. So just displaying the behavior is not to me vulnerable.
No, so, I would say it's volatile. There's a big difference between volatility and vulnerability. And just being an angry mess or a sad mess is just volatile, and actually creates a really unsafe place for children. And maybe this is where I'm quite guarded with my feelings, because I don't necessarily have the language, or don't necessarily have the immediate self-awareness to kind of recognize, hello, some strong feelings are happening here. And I think probably because a lot of my patterns, my day-to-day patterns, are like those soothing techniques that you're talking about, that are a little bit toddler. That's so interesting. So you've got to have the language.
Yeah, and also the ability to be compassionate with yourself very quickly if you're going to be vulnerable.
Right.
And okay, so actually, no, yes and no. So one, what I wrote down earlier was, when is it the right time to be vulnerable? Like, what I mean is, I don't mean right. What I mean is, when is the safe time to be vulnerable? Because the right time could be misconstrued as like, I mean, vulnerability should be celebrated. Okay, so I'll carry on that train of thought. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this too is because I read a couple of things recently about how vulnerability is going to be the key to success in the new world creation that is coming for us. Okay, so like, in the past, in old ways, the patriarchy has thrived because vulnerability is weakness. Yeah. You know, if you were vulnerable at work, you got shot down, you can only get in the boardroom if you have no feelings and you're just going to like go, go, go. You're not going to like, you know, nothing that you feel is going to come between you and the task at hand. Like that's patriarchal thinking. And the only way to be successful in the new way of doing things is going to be able to be vulnerable and to be able to then use that vulnerability to make change. So I was like, that's got me thinking, like, am I vulnerable enough? Like, where am I being vulnerable and where am I not? And why am I not in those situations and that kind of thing? So then, yeah, that question then came up of like, when is the safe time to be vulnerable? And it so depends on where you're sharing.
And like with my children. You do feel safe sharing at home in your family.
Yeah.
So what,
I can honestly tell you that when I've been like truly vulnerable, Gary has never, ever responded in any way but a loving way.
Yeah.
Like if I have been projecting or if I've been unbridly emotioning all over him, he has been taken aback, right? But if I have like been truly vulnerable in the sense of I know where this feeling is coming from, this is where it, like this is deep down what I'm experiencing, and I've sat down and told him that from like the heart rather than my anger or whatever it is, he has never ever responded in any way other than lovingly. And I think that's the superpower thing that is what I've been reading. When you are truly in a safe space and you are sharing in that way, the response is one that creates safety.
Yeah, I definitely agree for me and CJ that, yeah, I can be completely vulnerable with him.
And actually what's nice is that was kind of the foundation of our relationship was just random chats that did involve like, let's go there, let's go deep, you know, from when we first met, which was nice, but definitely not really with the kids, no. And then I think, yeah, my ability to, I think I'm equating vulnerability with maybe honesty.
I think there's an element of honesty,
On here or on, although I think I'm still fairly guarded on here with not wanting to necessarily give all like the whole story. And there are definitely things at the moment that I'm not giving the whole story on, like on the socials or whatever.
I don't think you can be vulnerable.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
And I don't think you can be vulnerable without being honest in the truest, truest sense. But you can show elements of, you can share your experiences to a certain point that allows other people to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I think that was literally, I wrote down literally just then what came into my mind was that there feels like there needs to be a purpose to vulnerability, not just, like, again, there's that difference between you're just projecting your emotions everywhere versus there's a reason for doing it. And that reason is either you're communicating with your family, your husband, your whoever, the people that are reading something for that you're trying to help, you know, there's got to be purpose for me. Interesting.
Yeah, I think the purpose for me of being vulnerable with my children first, before I was vulnerable in my marriage, was that I knew that that would create a connection with them deeper than the connection that I have with my parents.
Yeah.
And I really wanted that.
Say that. She's freaking out.
I don't think they listen. But you know, like we learn, every generation learns, right? Each generation we learn something from the last one, and there's certain things we all take from the experiences we've had to move into something else, or we just keep repeating the pattern. And I'm not repeating the pattern because I know that the pattern did not serve me to the greatest potential it could, so therefore I'm doing what I can to create habits in our family that break cycles. And therefore I think recently I've become way more vulnerable in my marriage because my blocker was growing up in a household where the two parents were so intertwined in their relationship it kind of excluded to a certain point the children, because their dynamic was so intertwined. I think I was scared of that. So therefore then the wonky bit was I was only being vulnerable with the kids and not being vulnerable with my husband.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And that's now changing.
So when we decided that this is what we were going to talk about yesterday, I was chatting to CJ about it, and we were kind of saying similar, you know, needs to be age appropriate, vulnerability, and that I suppose we kind of view our parenting as almost like a proactive training ground for vulnerability by using things like sports. Of, you know, we were literally having this conversation while sat watching Luke in goal, and we had Anna and Samuel with us, and I find Luke playing in goal very stressful, and so I was saying that, and I was like, oh, maybe that, you know, that's not honest, I'm feeling quite stressed watching Luke, and CJ's going, but Luke loves it. And Samuel and I got into a chat about it, and Sam was like, oh, how would you feel if one of us turned pro, if Luke was pro and Luke was a goalkeeper, would you be able to watch anything? And so we had a conversation about that, and that was interesting. And then around the dinner table, we said to all the kids, like Bethany was there as well, you know, would you want mummy or daddy to kind of say a lot of the stuff that we were feeling? And Samuel, God love Samuel. Luke and Anna just didn't really get it. They just didn't, like, they just sort of laughed and made it funny. It was funny. Samuel said that he would basically then feel like he wanted to make sure that I was okay. If I was saying I was having a bad time, he would want to know that I was okay.
Amazing.
Which I thought was just gorgeous. Beautiful. But then was like, oh, gosh, I don't want you to take on the responsibility of me being okay. And that's
I don't think that's responsibility. I think that's just him showing like how caring he is. Like that's his superpower.
He really is such a caring little human being. And then Bethany was saying that she just goes into like problem solving mode. And she's like, well, why are you asking me? Why are you telling me? Are you telling me because you want me to fix it? Are you telling me, like, and she just kind of straight away goes into like, oh, well, what's the logic here? What's going on here? But I have noticed recently that she and I have more honest conversations about humanity at large, almost. Like, she and I have a fairly shared, this is definitely my side of the family. Like, I remember my grandma just being so intolerant of people when they weren't like up to scratch, and I was like, sorry Bethany, that's just a family trait, like we don't suffer fools gladly, like it's that kind of. And we have lots of conversations about that, her struggles with that. But I guess it's more like a
jokey way. Maybe my goal at the moment is just that I feel really like I don't want to be volatile, and I think that's possibly like my feelings sometimes feel so strong that if I was to lean into them I would lose it.
And so I wouldn't, and so that's why I feel like I have to be really guarded. Like a lot of people have commented, you know, when they watch Anna lose her shit on the school run,
which happens far too often, and I'll get an occasional, wow, you're very patient. And inside I'm not patient at all. I'm like, if I do anything right now, apart from just sit and wait, it is going to be volatile. Like I'm going to scream and shout, and that doesn't feel good for me. I don't enjoy the guilt that comes from that. So I'll just sit and wait. Like, because I don't know what else. Does that make sense? I think maybe that we're just in different places of, I'm just like, don't be volatile. Don't be volatile. Don't be volatile. Hide everything. Because otherwise you're going to be out of control. I don't like being out of control. Oh, no, I really don't like being out of control. That's interesting.
So feeling emotions for you feels like being out of control?
Yep. 100%. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I've experienced the feeling of being out of control with rage for way too long. So for me, it's a welcome opportunity to be sad. Because...
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, I hate feeling sad.
I just feel like it's a better outlet. Like the crying is much better than the shouting for me. I'd rather like be sad And then, because behind rage, it's like all different emotions, isn't it?
Yeah,
rage is just the end. Yeah. So the fear and the sadness, I'd rather just express those than get to the rage.
And so, so how are your kids when they see you crying? Have my kids ever seen me cry? When Sooty died, when our dog died, I cried. And I feel like that's another one of those, I was kind of like thinking about that yesterday going, oh, that's training again, isn't it? Like you kind of do have pets as family, you know, when you have kids, so they can be trained in knowing the ways of looking after a being and then loss. Before it's a human. Not that Sooty was a commodity to lose, but you know that I think that might be the only time they've seen me cry, but then we were all crying, so you know, fair enough. Like I don't think I cried openly when Grandma died, and that was more sad, but I think maybe it was because their emotions weren't matched. That's it for me. So everyone, you know, the expectation is that everyone's going to be sad when the dog dies. Not that everyone wasn't sad when Grandma died. Sorry, Grandma, that sounds really horrible. But, you know, the dog is our dog, is our family pet. And the kids didn't know Grandma hugely because she lived quite far away. We saw her sporadically. They were all very little. She wasn't a regular part in their life, blah, blah, blah. Whereas for me, she was my everything. You know, I deeply love my grandma. So for me then to have cried over that in front of them would have felt like they weren't in that place, so I didn't want to take them to that place. I didn't want them to feel bad or worried because I was in that place.
I don't see it that, like, if I express an emotion, I don't feel like it's going to make them feel that. Like I don't feel that when I think the response I've had from my kids, so Ivy will sometimes cry with me because, like I said, she's an empath, and when I'm experiencing that emotion, part of her experiences it too, but that's also a bit of codependency there too. So like
she's a kid, she's allowed to be codependent, yeah, right? That's cool.
So yeah. Then I think, well, if kids are codependent, and they should be because we're their dependent, they're our dependents, so yeah. We look after them, is it wrong for them to like experience some of these emotions in a safe environment? Because she recovered very quickly and she hasn't talked about it since my sister left. So obviously me crying didn't trigger her in whatever sense. I don't know if you use the word trigger with kids. I didn't like resonate in her body for longer. Like she's not mentioned it again. She hasn't brought it up.
Because you know, the feeling moved through her body quickly enough.
That's it. Yeah. Because you know, with kids, if something has riled them or something is like, not traumatizing, that's too strong a word, but something is unresolved in them, they will speak about it, won't they? They'll speak about it in many different ways. They might not say the exact words, but they'll then, like if a child's scared of ghosts, they'll ask you to leave the light on, so you know if something has not moved through their body. And I have not experienced, when it's an open-hearted share of vulnerability, I have never experienced a residual like resonance in the kids afterwards, even if they've cried too. I mean, my Fern just kind of looks at me like, why are you doing that?
I can so imagine Fern doing that.
I think it's if I think in that case she was actually genuinely sad too, but I couldn't see her, she was in the boot of the car, so yeah, in a seat, not just strapped in,
not just shoved in the boot.
Yeah. But I think, you know, there's situations where she doesn't feel that emotion. She's not one that will go along with it. Whereas if any of them do feel it as well, they'll just join in with the emotion, like release, the emotional release of whatever. I've had experiences like that though, where I've had friends tell me stories and I've cried at their stories. I'm like, but I wasn't even there. But it's just them sharing it from that vulnerable place. Like I have a friend who shared a story of her postpartum psychosis, and I was sobbing. And it was, you know, sometimes it's about you and sometimes it's about them, but it's in that moment of where she shared it, just felt so emotionally raw that like it was right for that to come out. And it was a good thing. I think it's an old viewpoint that expressing emotions
is a weakness.
But I also think there is a way of doing it, because we can't go around expressing every emotion all day, right?
No, that's just being in your toddler too much.
I think, yeah, and also, yeah, it's that thing, isn't it, of not understanding where it's coming from.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, if you were just going around expressing your emotions all the time, you're then just living in that experience. You're just projecting your experiences of things, as opposed to being able to name the feelings and having a bit of self-reflection.
So I think the projection is the most important point there when you're sharing with kids. Yeah. Because I'm not projecting my emotions onto them. I'm experiencing one. And if they experience it too with me, that's not projection. That's just them being connected to me.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think actually in terms of some of my most proudest parenting moments of recent time have been when I have been able to, like the other day, Luke was at the park with his friend and Samuel wanted to go over and join him. Samuel doesn't have a phone. Luke did. And so I was like, can Bethany walk over with you so that I know that you've met up with Luke properly? Because I don't know where Luke is, and Luke's a bit flaky with answering his phone. And Samuel kind of rolls his eyes like, I'll be fine, for goodness sakes. And then I was like, okay, well, can you just get Luke to text me when you're there? And he was like, for goodness sakes, I'm going to be fine. Like, the park is literally, you can see the park from my house. It's not a big deal. And I just turned around to him and I was like, Samuel, this isn't about you. This is about me. I'm worrying. And it's not because I don't trust you. It's just, this is my problem. And so is that vulnerable? Is that?
Yeah.
Is that the answer? Massively. Like, that's the thing. Because I was able to identify the feeling as I'm worrying and I am trying to project it onto you. But hold on a second, I can regain. But I'm actually just going to ask you to maybe go with this. I need a bit of reassurance that you have made it to the park, okay? Not because I don't trust you, but because I'm just worrying. Yeah.
So I think the vulnerability there is in the sharing of how you're feeling. And him then understanding it's not about
him, but about me.
Yeah. That's the vulnerable bit for me.
Okay.
Because can you imagine like an adult being like that with you as a kid?
No.
No one ever said to me, like, this isn't about you, it's about me. No one ever said that.
No.
And that's vulnerable to me because I struggled with it for so long to say to my kids, this is about me, not you. I resisted it.
So I think one of my blockers with this is that when my mum felt feelings, it invariably meant that either she was very angry, probably with me, and there was a fight or a fallout from it, or she felt sadness or depression or stress or whatever was going on for her. And that normally equated to her withdrawing, either in the, you know, in that moment lying on the floor or at other times not speaking. And so maybe I'm trying to not feel any of those feelings too deeply around my kids because I don't want to repeat that pattern. But I think maybe I'm fearful of repeating that pattern of, if I feel those feelings, then my only option is to withdraw from them, and I don't want to do that. So I'm like, okay, well, I better not feel those feelings because then the pattern is to withdraw.
I feel like both situations, other than vulnerability, they were withdrawing. Because if you're withholding them, like, that's you keeping them like inside and shutting them down, that's withdrawing them. Or if you actively don't express them to the kids, that's also withdrawing for me. And like, not that this is like a beat ourselves up situation, but like, I definitely have had experiences where I, instead of talking about my feelings, have then just been like a dickhead to everyone for 24 hours, like not spoken to anyone, shouted at everyone, whatever. And so I know for me, if I don't find an outlet that is healthy, all that happens is I create literal wildfires behind me of carnage and damage. So until I can get in the place of like, I've just got to find a way to be able to express this. And it's like magic. As soon as it comes out, it's like just like literally, I've said this before, like sometimes when you say things out loud, the power has gone from it.
Oh, for sure. Because otherwise it swirls around in your head and becomes a much bigger problem. Yeah, yeah, totally.
I do think as well, like for me talking to the kids, I resonate more with the idea of woundings than trauma, purely because then it can put it in more of a abstract context. So like the abandonment wound, like I'm being a martyr because I want it to go my way, or I'm being a bit of a narcissist because I want it to go my way at the detriment of this, or whatever it is. Like I don't always have the words yet to express it all eloquently. Like I need to do a therapy degree, I think, just so I can learn all the language and be able to use it appropriately. But it's all, I have to just be gentle with that and be like, this is a new way that I'm learning of speaking to my kids. So every day I'm going to say it slightly differently until I've worked out the exact way that feels right to say it. And it can feel awkward as shit. There's so many times I'm like, I can't get this actual word out of my mouth because it feels so yucky inside. It feels so yucky.
Right. I feel like I'm in a place where I'm okay with it if I'm hungry. I can tell the kids that now. Like that's a big step. If I'm tired, I can tell the kids that. The idea of saying like I'm experiencing hormonal things fills me with dread.
Okay.
No thank you. And the idea of saying anything probably beyond like a physical thing.
Okay, but that's like good though, because I think it's about growth, right? So there's things I couldn't say I'm sorry to my child. Like I could not say that to my child in times gone by.
Okay, see, that's funny because I'm okay with doing that. That's really interesting.
And sometimes it still feels yucky coming out of my mouth. And I know it's because I have often in my life, not just in my childhood, but in my life in general, been demanded or told that I must say sorry when I didn't mean it.
Mm.
So the word sticks in my throat if I don't mean it. And sometimes I have to say it even if I don't mean it to the kids, because my ego says, be right. And my body says now, they're a child, it's not their fault, say sorry. And I'm like having this internal struggle inside myself, like, I don't want to say sorry.
Yeah. I do think the awareness that I have is definitely, it's not about you. Like we have that, not when I'm experiencing feeling, because I don't experience feeling. But when we talk about other people, we have to remember that this is generally not about you. This is about, you know, especially when the kids have gone through difficult things at school, it's going, well, that kid's going through a really tough time at home at the moment. And that's not to excuse a behavior, but that's just to understand and that it's not about you. These are hard lessons, aren't they? Okay. Yeah, I had a question. Just when you were saying about Fern being different, do you think that some people just don't feel feelings in the same way, sort of in their natural makeup, as opposed to someone like me who's trying to suppress the feelings a little bit? Is it that some people just don't have that massive high of or massive low? Yeah, thoughts?
Oh, absolutely.
Hmm.
Like, I think if you're a highly sensitive person, you feel things really, and I think there's varying levels of that too. So like, this is why I hate labels, right? Being a highly sensitive person says that all highly sensitive people are the same. I would count myself in the realms of semi highly sensitive about certain things, and that's very nuanced to me as a human being. So I'm very I am very highly sensitive to certain things that like really deeply affect me inside. And that's very different from other highly sensitive people. And the level at which I feel it is different too. So I'd say that I have three very highly sensitive kids, but all different things.
Yeah.
And then there's Fern. So one, if we look at it from like a human design perspective, she is a non-emotional, and so am I actually, but my emotional center is open. So the energy of emotion is how I experience life. So that's why I can be an empath as well, but it also means I can shut off that part of myself. Whereas three of my children are an emotional authority, which means that their emotional waves are not from something that even they can really understand, but more learning how to ride it. Okay, so that's like a human design perspective. If I look at like varying situations that happen, Fern is very able to express her emotions, like of sadness, anger, let's just do the basics, happiness, excitement. She unbridled bloody excitement, that kid. So she does not have a blockage with it, with showing her emotion, labeling the emotion. She doesn't necessarily in any way care what emotion another person is feeling if she's not invested in it. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think she just has boundaries.
I think that's a really good thing.
But she's not unkind. So she will, if I've been sad or whatever, I've often had her come up and hug me rather than run away. And, you know, she doesn't just like ignore it, but she knows that I need something. It's just she's not in it with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's lovely. And this really makes me think then, to be vulnerable is also about talking about boundaries. And like you were saying at the beginning of kind of the whole, you know, this isn't because of you, that instantly provides a boundary, right? So to be vulnerable requires a safe space, and to provide children with a boundaries within that, which all feels like very advanced emotional stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
Because what we don't want to do, or what I guess my fear is that we then grow our children into being carers. I don't ever want my children to be like, oh, we've got to look after mummy because she's an emotional mess. Yeah.
I think as well, it's about the individual relationship you have with each person and knowing where the vulnerability is in that particular relationship rather than en masse. So like, I think as my children become teenagers, they will need varying levels of vulnerability from me. So I know that my connection with Ivy is the best when I am open-heartedly vulnerable with her. And there are no, like she, and she can feel that we're on an equal playing ground when it comes to our hearts. And like, I know she senses if I'm not there and I don't want to go there with her.
Okay, tell me more about that, because I find that really difficult. I would say Bethany's the same. Bethany absolutely knows when I'm being guarded with my feelings. And mm-hmm. I suppose the whole, you know, I think I'm hiding it and I know I'm not. And that's when Bethany will push and she will ask, like, it's those questions that she asks me.
I think though, like we talked about this the other week and two of us were talking to you and saying to you, like, you are the one of the only people we know that can go into their heart the quickest out of any person I know. Like there's no resistance between you and your heart, which is why you can write those things on Instagram.
But why can I do it in that context and not with my children?
Well, you can do it in friendships. You can do it on Instagram. You can do it on the podcast. I struggle to do it in those environments, but I'm okay with doing it with my kids. I think it's just about right now where we're at in our personal journey. Safe spaces.
Yeah, totally. Safe spaces. And also I think probably I have training in that. Like that was always part of what I did as a job was, you know, we sat and we wrote
well, in the religious context, it was testimony. So you sat and you wrote the stuff and you kind of did the things.
But when it comes to parenting, though, the way we parent, it's not just how we parent. There's two of us parenting in our dynamics, right? There's like a dad and a mum in our particular families, then four children. And in my house, up until quite recently, I would say that I called all the shots in the parenting because that was a control issue on my part. And I very much excluded Gary from like a lot of what went on with the kids and often said it's, you know, blamed it on varying different reasons that were him and it was nothing to do with him. It was to do with me allowing him to have an opinion or whatever. And now we're both parenting. There are, you know, different versions of vulnerability there. Like his version of vulnerability with the kids is different from mine. What he's comfortable with is different from mine. So it's all about those individual relationships. And sometimes something will happen and it'll like force your hand in a way to like show you the path ahead. Like Ivy went through a period of time when she was like, I think it was like 7 to 8, which I think is such a huge age for kids that no one ever talks about. But she went through this really violent stage and she is like the least violent person I know, like day to day, which is why I was so shocked, because it kind of came out of nowhere and she was throwing things and like barricading herself in the room. She would like have this foul mood and I just didn't know. And I got some advice at the time that was like, where are you connecting with her on a heart to heart kind of basis? And the answer was nowhere. And I had to that's when our cacao ceremony started. And we started writing notes to each other and we had a book that we shared our feelings in. And it massively worked, massively, because all she needed was for me to be not just her mother, but her friend, and not just a friend that you see every now and again, but like a friend like me and you are friends that if I felt ashamed, I could still tell you.
Yeah.
But also, so then, we have boundaries. We do have boundaries.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what are you then doing? Like, you know, you're not, I guess.
I'm not going to tell her like intimate details about my relationship with Gary, for example.
Yeah.
The same way I wouldn't tell you, because those are just like between me and him. There's things like where she wants something and she's not having it because she's not allowed it. And that's when we're not friends, we're mother and daughter. But at the same time, there's a way of doing that where you're still connected on a heart-centered place, I think.
Yeah, I think I've just written down, it just strikes me that vulnerability is just takes practice, takes having a purpose behind it, and takes boundaries.
Yeah, and at the moment I'm really struggling with this idea of like open vulnerability. Okay, so I know that you share like quite a lot on social media. And I have dabbled with social media on and off for years. And I just don't know. Like, I still don't know about what to share and what not to share. So like writing my book, for example, if I'm going to go ahead with writing my book, then that level of vulnerability kind of needs to come out at some point somewhere, probably for it to be really authentic. It needs like an element of that in it. But does it? Does it though? Like, do you need to know what happened to me in childhood for you to want to read my book?
I think it depends on the context. And I think the challenging thing with writing stuff that then is to do with ultimately making a sale of your book, of my booking a business, you know, people coming to my business, is, are we using our honesty and our vulnerability as a commodity? Are we using it as a tool to sell? What's our purpose? We have to be really careful about that. And I think that's where I feel okay with vulnerability within my business. A, because I've created my own safe space, and B, because I have I think, it's going to sound really wanky to say it, but I feel like I have kind of a noble purpose, a vocation in saying the stuff that I do, which is my vocation at the moment is to be a quiet cheerleader for mothers who are going through the stuff that I've gone through. And I have the
magic, my brain's going, the skill, I guess that, yeah, I have the skill at the moment to at times be able to express things in written word that gets to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, do you, but so, and I think maybe the other part of this conversation is that it doesn't have to be that vulnerability is a one size fits all kind of thing. That for me, vulnerability, where I am going to be vulnerable, is in this place, and where you're going to be vulnerable is with your children. And it's okay that there isn't one and there isn't another. Like, it's okay.
I think that's okay for now for me, but like for me moving forward, my goal is to be able to be openly vulnerable in my life with boundaries, and to move forward in the expression of that in society, because that is what we are missing in lots of our areas of our lives, I think.
Yeah, and I think for me, I know that I know when I'm guarding around my children, and I know that's a guard, like that's a coping mechanism for me. Like, that, you know, I know it in my body, and perhaps maybe that's the same for you with your book, of you know that there's some kind of blocker there that needs working through for you to be able to decide what to do next with it. Do you share those kind of stories or not?
Did you see the interview with Gabor Mate where he shared the experience of slapping his son?
Yeah, well, it was in his book. I read it in his book. Really powerful. Yeah.
So I like saw it on a reel or whatever. And I just thought, oh, I've got a new like level of respect for you. And I really did feel that that was a beautiful time to share, like that particular story. But clearly he'd done enough work around it that he could deliver it in such a way that he was being compassionate to himself. And I think maybe it's that connection with the compassion of like, if I'm not ready to be compassionate with myself when I tell this story and all the people involved, then it's not the right time to tell the story.
And I think maybe for me, I can be compassionate in written word because I'm a step removed from it. I get to craft what I'm writing and in my life with in front of my children. I struggle with compassion for me and for the kids. As in, my default is to be not compassionate. My default is to be like towards myself, even, you know, get a grip, you know, sort your life out. So that's not compassion. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the written word, I feel that. I can feel compassion. I can feel it. It's interesting, isn't it? How different. What's the medium? What's your medium?
Yeah. And that's the first medium, I guess, that we. I guess that's where I always think if it comes naturally in that space, or it comes more naturally in that space than others, that's the place to focus on for until you feel ready for the other spaces. Like, I feel ready to be vulnerable with my kids, and I'm practicing my skills there before I maybe, and then I'm now practicing on Gary too. Like, I'm being more vulnerable with him, and I'm not quite ready necessarily to be like that in other places. And it's often when I'm not sure how I'll respond to the response. So that's a really bad English sentence, but I'm not sure how I'll respond to the response, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I do think that I've been very, very lucky in my writing that I haven't had a huge amount of problems. There have been a couple of things recently where I've had backlash, and that has thrown me. There have been some family things that have triggered family. But the other thing for me in terms of publicly sharing stuff is I feel like I stand in my integrity of telling the truth, of telling my story, of telling things that are true to me, for me. And when I write it out, I can check that. There's no bullshit in there. I can kind of go, well, I know I've got it right because I like that I've written it down and I can see it. Whereas I think like in everyday life, I think it's just harder to kind of maybe it's conditioning as well, isn't it? Partly that anybody that's highly sensitive has probably had an experience where they've been told to stop crying, stop being silly, blah, blah, blah. And you get told to shut their emotion down because other people can't handle it. Not because you shouldn't have the feelings, but because it can't be handled. And that's really difficult. And then I feel like I have to be in complete control of my feelings to be hurt, to be listened to. And so then when it's written down, I am in complete control because I'm crafting the words and choosing the words. Whereas when I'm speaking, it's like, ah, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's why there is a benefit to social media and why I remain on there is because often I can only find that kind of depth and honesty and truth from the people I follow on there.
Yeah.
And I don't follow that many people, and I often swap and change who I do follow because I like to move on and change my direction with things. And I tend to like try and tailor it to whatever interest I have. So then I get a lot of that thing come up. But I do know that I can instantly tell if what I'm receiving is not from that place.
Yeah, I think I really agree with that. And actually the times when I I'm sitting racking my brains going, what should I write for social media today? What deep dark depths shall I touch today? Those are the times when I can't do it because it doesn't come across as of having integrity because I'm trying to do it. That's really challenging for me. Yeah, that it needs to come from that place. And I think often people on the socials have a similar experience with me where they might write something that really resonates. Now they're like, well, I've got to carry on writing something that really resonates, but now I'm forcing it. And that, if that's how you're feeling with the book, you know, you can't force that. You can't force vulnerability, I don't think.
I don't think you can either. No, I think it does have to be something that comes and wants to be released, but you have to work at it too. And yeah, I don't mean force it, but I mean provide ample opportunity,
and learn the language and learn where you're emotionally dysregulated, so be able to give yourself the compassion and the language to do those things.
That's why I think the coaching work that we've both done, that's huge for that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like teaching us how to identify what's happening within ourselves.
And I think from a, you know, knowing what I know about certainly a lot of parents that I've worked with, is that a lot of people are coming from a place of trauma, be it big T or small T trauma, and actually this emotional language is not normal. And also this knowing when you are emotionally triggered is really, really hard to then be able to move into that place of going, oh, hold on, I'm just projecting this experience, versus I'm able to identify the feelings. Like, that's a massive thing to learn when you're coming from a place of trauma. I feel like I need to have this conversation almost every single day, and it's taken us an hour to get to this point where I go, oh yeah, you've got to remember when you're triggered. Like, do you know what I mean? It's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's not enough words in our language for all of the new things that we're experiencing. And maybe they're not new things, but maybe we've just never had enough language for it. And the English language does get the odd new word, right? But generally we're still working on what we've always had, and it's, I think, needs more like actual words to describe the nuance, because at the moment there's just like, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm disappointed. I should probably just find some, like a poster to stick up in my house of like, which one of these are you, and get the kids to point to it. But I don't think there's enough words to, and there's, I haven't yet found a word for that like deep discomfort that I feel in the pit of my stomach when I know there's something to share and I'm not quite ready for the words to come out of my mouth. You know, the one that like kind of makes you squirm like this, like
I remember reading like in Peter Levine's book on trauma proofing your kids. I think did I mention it on the podcast before? Anyway, and he would say, rather than needing to identify the feeling, you should ask your children to identify the colour and the shape and the feel of the feeling. And so after I read that, I tried that very briefly with my children, and they all just like eye rolled at me like, fucking, she's read a book again. That's what my kids do like at me. They're like, oh, she's read a book. Bethany, you're going, her and her books. That's what Bethany, you know.
So, oh my god,
but that's funny because I can read all these books and I'm like, I've got a book on trauma and I'm like hiding it going, I don't want the kids to see that I'm reading a book on trauma, because maybe they'll ask me a question, why are you reading a book on trauma? And I'm like, oh, it's just a book I'm reading. It's so funny, isn't it? Like when you gave me Veers for Vulva the other day, the book on that. Well,
have you hidden that book?
Yeah.
Would you like me to have the vulnerable conversation with your children about vulvas? You can be in the chat too, but you have to stay quiet in the corner whilst I explain to them.
I mean, yes, because I wanted to not have that conversation. And also, I think my children would be deeply uncomfortable. Do they need it? Have they got enough stuff at school? I mean, Samuel is so worldly about all of that kind of stuff. I briefly showed it to Bethany and went, hey, look, it's loads of willies. And was totally in. But I like overplayed it. I was like, oh, let's make this really funny. I mean, so immature. But also, I am immature. What did she say? She rolls her eyes at me because she thinks, like, there's a lane around here that CJ and I, when we go running, there's a farm and it's called Dancing Dick's Farm. And I just think it's the funniest thing in the world. And my kids know that I think it's funny. And that's vulnerability in our house, is me absolutely just losing my mind when CJ took the boys out running a little while ago and they all stopped and took a picture of them all at the sign of Dancing Dick's Farm and sent it to me because they know I think it's funny. But like, so immature.
That's not immature, that is funny, because dick is a funny word.
Funny, and dancing dick, that's funny.
So why didn't you get the book and go, look, here's some more dancing dicks, because those dicks on there are definitely dancing. It's a good book for dancing dicks.
That feels like really fun. I'm not okay with that level of vulnerability. Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
I read that book to my kids and Gary was in the room and he was deeply uncomfortable with me reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm speaking for him, actually. The language of his body suggested that he was deeply uncomfortable, but he was also joining in. So I wonder if, like, he didn't join in with words, but he joined in with his presence. So I wonder if it was just that in his experience of life, and actually in mine, talking about body parts like that is not normal. But something in me is so passionate about like medical terminology for our body parts. Vulvas exist. Vulvas are complicated. Like, they look this way. And then in that book is a picture of two people actually having sex, which I did wonder if I should actually, but do you know, they didn't even really notice. Like, I went past that page along with all the other pages and they just kind of looked at it like, oh, okay. And I was they're going to click, they're going to realise I've done it.
Yeah, I think my kids would be like, Anna would be the kind of person that would go, is that what you and Daddy are doing? Is that what you're doing? And she would ask it like with an accusing tone, like, is that, seriously?
What would you answer?
No.
Oh my God.
I haven't showed her the book because I don't have the vulnerability and the words to be able to. It's so interesting, isn't it? I feel like we're winding up to like having a sex talk on this podcast at some point soon.
Oh yeah, we have. We did say we were going to talk about that.
No, we said we were never going to talk about it because I don't feel.
You just suggested it, so I'm ready when you are.
I know. Maybe we should give Kiara the words.
I wonder. Like, okay, so tell me the areas in which you feel the most vulnerable to express. Sex.
Yeah, definitely sex. Sadness. I think that those are probably the, yeah, sadness is probably my biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
And mistakes, fear. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think probably because when I feel a mistake or I'm feeling fear of a mistake, I'm very quick to spiral. And so then I'm very quickly feeling out of control. And so I very quickly need to regain some kind of control to avoid volatile projection of my fear at everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so I wrote down on your side sex, sadness, mistakes and fear, and then I put mine on the other side, and this is why we're friends, right? This is my side. Love, joy and excitement are my biggest vulnerabilities.
Wow.
Mm.
Why?
I guess because the way I was conditioned to receive those experiences were wonky.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I've known for a long time that to be openly enjoying those things is uncomfortable for me. But I haven't necessarily got down to the bottom of why on all of them.
So do you force yourself to have moments of kind of joy and like,
yeah,
fun?
Sometimes it's like, so those things create shame for me.
Oh.
Yeah. So if I'm experiencing them and I notice myself experiencing them and I'm not, and I sometimes will shut them down, not so much now, but like in the past, I've like shut them down quickly. So, and I think it's because, I guess it's like the self-worth and value.
That you don't deserve to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I know. Sad.
That is sad.
But I don't feel like that all the time. Like, I don't feel like that all the time. It's just sometimes I think I'm learning to experience those things and noticing when I'm putting in shame instead of enjoyment into it, right? So for example, I had an experience where we went away to a hotel for 3 days, two nights, sorry. And we did that in the summer and it was a shit show of my emotions. So I decided that I was going to not repeat that experience. What I did say was, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to a hotel with my kids ever again. And I decided that that was very much cutting off some joyful experiences. So then we did do it again, like a few months later, and the same hotel, and I had a joyful time and noticed myself having a joyful time and actively healed my non-joyful time.
Oh, that's good. Good.
But yeah, it's I think there's a lot of shame around women actually enjoying things.
Yeah.
A lot of shame. Like if I like think about like looking at I don't know, I guess parenting advice of like women who are really happy all the time with their families, obviously it's not real because it's Instagram, but think about all the parenting stuff that is out there, which is why I think you resonate on Instagram so much, because you give the alternative perspective. That's not saying you don't have joy with your family, but we're being sold this idea that it should be joyful all the time or loving all the time or like having glorious excitement all the time with your kids, when the reality is you have both. both. And I think varying, like some of us are more comfortable in the experience of, this is just a bit shit, in it, like having kids. And I definitely think get sucked into that.
I think that that's so interesting, because that is one thing that I do feel comfortable sharing with my kids. And the first thing that comes to my mind is like the other day, Friday nights have become my night. Like, I watch the new episode of Picard. Normally everything I watch is on my phone through my headphones, and that I am totally cool with that because I do it whilst I'm washing up or whatever. But I watch Picard on the big TV with the soundbar, generally with a snack, and it's like it does feel kind of like a sacred moment. I thoroughly enjoy it. And Bethany watches it with me, and Samuel kind of potter around. Luke doesn't give a shit, he goes upstairs. But the music at the end is like a Star Trek fan's dream. It's glorious. And the kids, like, I'm just like, don't speak. And I'll just sit and just like revel in this just amazing music. And then they all go, did you enjoy that, Mummy? And I'm like, I did. That was wonderful. But I'm quite open with maybe gratitude, like, not, yeah, gratitude of kind of noticing the things that just bring me deep joy. Like, you know, CJ brought some lilies home the other day and they just brought me much joy, and I just keep going, oh, I love those, I love the lilies. Like, yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? But I'm like, yeah, share the joy, but don't necessarily want people to ruin that.
Don't talk during the Star Trek theme, please.
I think that's like reasonable.
Don't talk.
I think that is a very reasonable boundary.
Yeah.
Especially when all yours stay up past like your bedtime. So I think it's like okay to say, this is your moment.
Let me just enjoy the music.
Yeah. Oh, it was a goodie.
Yeah.
Just a little note to end the podcast to say, I'm super aware that we don't have a proper introduction to each episode, like a hi kind of thing, hi, welcome, and we don't have an outro, is that even the word, to our episodes ever. Like, we just kind of end them. I'm aware of that. Maybe we'll fix that, maybe we won't, maybe it's a problem that needs fixing, I don't know. But anyway, just to say thanks. We love doing this, and we are so grateful that you listen. Like, genuinely, thank you.